I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here 9 to 11 o'clock every weekday. Every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we'll do what we're going to do today, and that is Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. If you are moody, depressed, tired, the first thing to do is turn off the news. But outside of that, if you want to get those kinds of things with you fixed, I've got some good content for next hour talking about these things and the pretty simple solution to it and its comparison to the medical establishment's choice for how to attack these problems. So check that out next hour. Also got a graphic. I'm gonna eye it between now and the start of next show. I've heard someone said it might have been a fake. It's very hard to tell what our government comes out with as far as health stuff. That is, how much of it is real and how much of it is a joke, a prank. It's difficult to tell the difference. Because our government and the medical establishment's advice on nutrition, medicine, health is so patently absurd that sometimes it's kind of hard to tell if we're getting trolled or not. So anyway, next hour, Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. Quote of the day today is from Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden, who is currently exiled in Russia. He said, "I would rather be without a state than without a voice." That's Edward Snowden. I am listening. It's just interesting that this quote came across my feed today. I'm listening to a podcast. There's a podcast called American Scandal. I think it's extremely well done. It's just interesting stories about all kinds of different events throughout history. Some of them business scandals, some political scandals. It's really very interesting, usually in anywhere 4 to 8 part segments. But I enjoyed it, and I was listening to it last night, and it was actually about Edward Snowden. I was listening to it as I was getting ready to go to sleep, and I realized I had to turn it off because I was getting kind of fired up. It's interesting to listen to what Edward Snowden went through, what he sacrificed. He gave away his pretty comfortable life with a woman that he loved in order to blow the whistle on the federal government collecting data on everyday Americans, which they're not supposed to do. They're legally forbidden for doing. But what really struck me as I listened to that is I thought, well, didn't really make much of a difference, did it? Americans should have been outraged about that, but they weren't. They didn't really care. And the saddest thing is, and I've kind of scolded this before, so I apologize, but what the conservative mantra has been for so long has been, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't have anything to worry about. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. As we continue to see the abuses of the federal government against people who I'm sure weren't doing anything wrong, so certainly they didn't have anything to worry about, and suddenly they've got a whole lot to worry about. So it's really quite amazing that Edward Snowden could blow the whistle on this big black cube building out in the Utah desert that is just sucking up information on private American citizens, violating our privacy, and the American citizens' reaction was, yeah, I figure they were doing that. We've lost our fight. We've lost our fight in this country. Yesterday, in the markets, economically, ouch. Whew. Market took a hit yesterday. The Dow was off over 4%. The S&P and the NASDAQ were down over 5%. And the markets and investors, obviously, are worried about the fact that high inflation means the Fed's going to continue to raise interest rates. This takes away the monetary heroin that corporations and individuals and home buyers and governments at every level, the heroin that they've come used to, which is basically 0% money. They're worried that that gravy train is being taken away. But maybe for those people, it's certainly bad for the course of the nation. But soon markets, investors, and citizens are going to realize the Fed isn't actually serious about fighting inflation because they can't. They probably will raise by 75 basis points to 1% on the interest rates that they control. I think there's that meeting next week, I believe. But that'll probably be just about it. That will tip us into a recession that most even the political class won't be able to ignore, and then they will start retreating. You know, it was interesting yesterday. Bitcoin also tanked. Bitcoin yesterday dropped over 10%, according to the email that I got from Coinbase over a 12-hour period. And it's just very interesting to watch, as we talked yesterday, even about these central bank digital currencies that are coming. I hope Bitcoin can survive and but I'll tell you, if they roll out these central bank digital currencies, they're going to have to crush Bitcoin. They're going to have to make it illegal. And we know Americans don't like to do things that break the law because so many people are so proud of their law-abiding status that they'll abandon it. But Bitcoin has got to decouple itself from the NASDAQ and from the stock market, or it is going to get monkey-hammered from here as well. So invest accordingly if you are a crypto buyer. Libertarian Party tweeted out, ending inflation was never the state's goal. Convincing you they're ending inflation as they spend trillions on corporate welfare and proxy wars overseas is. And they're exactly right. I've brought this up for weeks now. They're not actually fighting inflation. If they were, interest rates right now would be 9 or 10%. I heard Dana Loesch yesterday talking about the new inflation numbers, and she was blasting Joe Biden, as she should. She played a clip from, I don't know if you're familiar with Rick Santelli. He's a pretty interesting guy. He comments on the bond market, so people probably don't know him because the bond market, the least sexiest yet most important part of the markets. He occasionally comes through with some sound bites, and so Dana Loesch yesterday was playing Rick Santelli saying that they all agreed it was government spending that caused the inflation, and the problem is that Joe Biden has gone on a huge spending spree. And he's exactly right. The people on CNBC mourning the loss of free monetary heroin, you know, they will change their minds. They hate to see the Fed raising rates. But it's just a shame that people like Dana Loesch, Rick Santelli, Rick Santelli might have talked about these things. He's a pretty consistent guy. But it's a shame that within political talk radio, that people did not complain about this under Trump when he was the biggest spending president in history. Now, of course, this was after Obama, who was the biggest spending president in history before Donald Trump. And that was after George Bush, who was the biggest spending president in history, after Bill Clinton, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the problem that we have here and why I don't have any faith that any of these things will be solved is that Trump supporters don't dare utter the words, Trump really screwed us, signing all these huge budgets and creating all that money to cover up for the states that closed down during COVID. And it will resist, it will rest entirely on the show to speak these unspeakable words, along with blasting Biden for doing even worse. Because it was also interesting that Dana was talking about Dana Loesch yesterday was talking about inflation and oil prices. Apparently, the White House did some kind of a victory lap yesterday over the fact that gas prices have gone down. And they've gone down a chunk. I mean, if we're consistent, if we blame Joe Biden for the huge rise in gas prices, do we give him credit for them coming down? I don't. But Dana Loesch was talking yesterday that the Saudis have announced that OPEC would be doing production cuts, which will now start raising the price of oil and gas. Our good friends, the Saudis. There they go again. I guess they don't place a whole lot of value in us helping them bomb the crap out of Yemen. Not doing us any favors. They're announcing production cuts with OPEC. And so I'm going to wonder aloud again. I wonder if maybe Trump could bring up this production cut at one of the partner meetings for the LIV golf tournament. You know, that partnership that Donald Trump has with the Saudis that he called a gold rush. So our American first president making a bundle in a business partnership with a country that attacked us on 9/11. And we'll be paying more for gas again. Donald Trump is the America First president. He's in a business partnership that he describes as a gold rush with the country that funded ISIS. Now, I, again, these are things I know that dare not be said or acknowledged, but I just see, to me, and again, I know I'm a weirdo out on my intellectual island. It's a lonely place. But I find weird that we have an America First guy, kind of the head of the America First movement, in a business partnership to unseat an American PGA, as bad as they were. I know they slighted Donald Trump. I'm no fan of the PGA. But instead of the PGA, we've decided to try to supplant it with our America First president partnering up with the Saudi Arabians, the funders of 9/11 and ISIS, who are about to start hiking oil and gas prices. I find that odd. I know I don't hear it anywhere else, so it might be me. It might be me. But it does seem kind of odd. But maybe Donald Trump, next time they have a partners meeting for the LIV golf tournament, he could go, hey guys, could you not cut production right now? My people back home are really hurting with these high gas prices. That would be absolutely super duper. I'm sure he's doing everything in his power to make sure that's taken care of. There was also a commemorating 9/11. Our Department of Homeland Security head, Mayorkas, went on TV and said some stuff. And I'm kind of interested in people's reaction to this. I'm actually interested. You're welcome to call in or you can email me. I need to get me one of them there text lines, I guess. I keep being told to get one. And I guess I should do it because I am interested in what Mayorkas says and what conservatives, if you can look in the rearview mirror of 20 years, do you see any mistakes that maybe were made on the conservative side of things? Now, I certainly spend my time here attacking the left, but I don't talk to leftists. And I'm just curious, listening to this head of Department of Homeland Security, the agency set up by George W. Bush, with the support of all of the Republicans in Congress, and the vast majority of conservative voters, now you've got Mayorkas running it. And what he said in the anniversary of 9/11 was really pretty shocking. We'll get to that when we come back. Stick around. You know, I actually was in a conversation last night, a text exchange, a little small group text of people talking about bug out locations. And I don't think it's I think these are conversations that people are having, kind of making, you know, probably right now it's pretty casual. You know, people are kind of thinking about, you know, if it really goes down, a lot of people are visualizing this civil war. To me, I believe we're going to have another huge credit crisis, and I believe the Federal Reserve is out of ammunition to fix it this time. That, along with all of the countries around the world that we've alienated, finding alternatives to the dollar, I think we're in big trouble. So we were actually having a conversation about, you know, who was going to go where, and one of the things that came out in the conversation was, I really don't have any skills to offer. I don't know who's going to take me in, and I could be wildly annoying. If the S ever hits the F and people have to kind of bug out to the woods and get into their little compounds, I've got to have to resist every urge that I have to constantly say, I told you, people, I told you, I told you. Libertarians may have to find their own space so that we don't constantly pester each other, because we would all have known and been warning about these kinds of things for 50 years. Not myself. I'm only about 20 years into understanding exactly what our federal government is. But, yeah, I might be kind of annoying. I promise you, if you take me in, I'll I've got some, I'm fairly handy, but I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a farmer. I got a black thumb. I'm in big trouble. I'm just going to put it that way. But if you take me in, I promise I won't constantly say I told you so. That being said, there were libertarians standing on the sidelines as Department of Homeland Security was being formed, as the Patriot Act was being signed, as the National Defense Authorization was being enacted under George W. Bush, and libertarians were standing on the sidelines going, "Ugh, you really don't want to do that. Hold on a second, guys. I know we're hurting from this 9/11 thing, but is this really the path we want to go down?" And unfortunately, the right that was in charge at the time said, "Oh, absolutely. It's about national security. There's a terrorist behind every bush trying to come take our stuff and bomb our little girls." And so you allowed this snake. It's like a vampire. You invited it into the house. And this is what it is now. This is Mayorkas. He's the head of the Department of Homeland Security now. And, of course, this is on MSNBC, where he gets away with saying these kinds of things because the people at MSNBC, really most of the mainstream media, I would say even Fox. Fox is one of the worst. Fox News. This is why I have such disdain for Fox. Outside of really Tucker Carlson and a couple of spots on that network that are entertaining or somewhat informative. But Fox News, they are the ones that gave you the big red alerts. They were the biggest peddlers of the terrorist porn, the fear porn around terrorism in the wake of 9/11. They're the ones that scared the bejesus out of the right into giving away a ton of your constitutional rights. And this is really one of my big beefs with Fox News. But CNBC had this Mayorkas character on. This is the Secretary of DHS, Department of Homeland Security. A creepy name, just in and of itself. But anyway, in the remembrance of 9/11, as he stands in front of the pools where the towers stood before they were brought down, this is what he had to say.
The Department of Homeland Security was formed in the wake of the September 11th attacks. How has it evolved since then to safeguard the U.S. from foreign threats?
Jonathan, the threat landscape has evolved considerably over the last 20 years. You know, back when 9/11 occurred, in those years, we were very focused on the foreign terrorist, the individual who sought to do us severe harm, to enter the United States and do us harm. It then evolved. We began to be more and more concerned about the individual already resident in the United States, radicalized by a foreign terrorist ideology.
Now this is very interesting to me, and I would imagine this was the plan all along. This is very, if you listen to the metamorphosis of the war on terror. First, it was focused externally. We needed to monitor the entire world. We needed to be involved everywhere around the world. We needed to send troops all over the world to protect us here at home. Those foreign radical extremists. And then we realized that there were some of these extremists here at home. Now, we've talked about it at length, show after show. Every time the FBI announced one of these big busts, they thwarted another terrorist attack. Invariably, it was some loner guy on Facebook or 4chan or something that was had no ability to carry out attack. He had no support system. He wasn't part of any organized structure. And then suddenly an FBI informant comes on the scene and says, "Hey, Abdul, you seem kind of angry. Wouldn't it be great to bomb X, Y, or Z?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, I guess so." And they go, "Well, what if you had the weapons?" I mean, they basically just give him everything he could possibly need. "We'll fly you to Dallas to scout out the location. And then we'll tell you how we can get the explosives. And then we'll get them for you. And then we'll rent a van for you. And then all you got to do is drive the van to this area." And then as soon as they get in the van, the FBI busts them and says, "We thwarted another terrorist attack." This has been the game now for 20 years. And unfortunately, every time this happened, conservatives cheered. Look at that FBI keeping us safe, never really paying attention to the regular playbook of these things, which were setups just to justify this war on terror here at home. And convince you that the federal government needed to monitor not foreign activity, but now domestically. They justified their existence, they justified their large budgets, and they justified domestic surveillance of everybody because the threat had come here. And then the final stage of this is...
Now we are seeing an emerging threat, of course, over the last several years of the domestic violent extremist, the individual here in the United States radicalized to violence by a foreign terrorist ideology, but also an ideology of hate, anti-government sentiment, false narratives propagated on online platforms, even personal grievances. The threat landscape has evolved. 20 years ago, uppermost in our minds was not the cybersecurity threat, the threat of cyber criminals or foreign adverse states. Now it very much is.
So the big takeaway from that is that the war on terror has taken its turn. The threat landscape, as he describes it, has changed. It used to be focused externally to these radicalized people that sought to do us harm. And now it has evolved into people here, the anti-government types. Hold on a second. I got to go. Well, I got to take a break. I guess I'll go lock the studio door, make sure that the doors to the station are locked. How much longer does the individual who's not a fan of this federal government, how much longer are we going to have a voice here? We're part now of, according to the DHS, we're part of the threat landscape. I have said quite openly, maybe mistakenly, maybe short-sightedly, this is an anti-government show. So I could be in big trouble. But there's something almost kind of ironic about it. And I'm curious what people think about it. I'll break this down. I'll explain to you what I'm talking about when I come back. Stay with me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking about the Patriot Act, Department of Homeland Security. The war on terror has been turned inward, and now the biggest threat, they tell us, are domestic terrorists, the anti-government types, the people with the grievances, they said. And I hate to tell you, if you're on the right or the left, I bet you got a whole host of grievances. Of course, you all think it's just the other side's fault. I was actually looking at the Patriot Act vote during the break there. You know, I'd hear something interesting. In the Mississippi delegation of the Patriot Act, and this is why I tell you, Republicans sold you this bill of goods. Now it's coming back to bite you. Libertarians warned you. Everybody in the Mississippi delegation to Congress voted yes on the Patriot Act, passage of the Patriot Act, except Benny Thompson. Of course, now he sits atop the Department of Homeland Security subcommittee, doesn't he? Isn't he like the chairman of the Homeland Security Council? It's just kind of interesting, but all of the other Republicans here in the state voted yay for it. Ron Paul voted no on the Patriot Act. He understood it was unconstitutional. It wasn't going to keep us safe. He understands the if you desire security instead of liberty, you'll get neither. But anyway, it's just interesting to me when we see this domestic terrorist label placed on everybody from moms who go to school board meetings to people who are upset with the federal government, any troublemakers, and the left will learn this very, very hard lesson. They should already know this. The left was cast the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, the deep state was unleashed on these groups not that long ago. Now they think they can use these things to bludgeon the Trump supporters. With these rules, just like Benny Thompson is. He votes no on the Patriot Act, and now he sits atop the Homeland Security Committee. I wonder if, and you know, I think about the January 6th protesters. I think three or four more of them were convicted yesterday, I guess. I saw a headline. I didn't see the story. We know that many of them have been in jail, some of them awaiting trial in deplorable conditions, tales of basically torture going on in American prisons with January 6th protesters. And I really wonder if the war on terror, this targeting of people that has gone from outside of the country to foreign radicals to what they consider domestic radicals, you know, constitutionalists. I wonder if the people in the Middle East that were rounded up and sent to Gitmo, where they've been held for decades without charges, are getting a tiny snicker about the January 6th protesters who were locked up in solitary confinement cages right here in the United States. I mean, if I was an innocent Muslim, they aren't all innocent. Some actually may want to harm the foreign invaders and occupiers of their countries. But many of the people in Gitmo, again, the right has largely cheered for this institution that because you believed that your government was just there because they loved you and wanted to keep you safe. I will point you again to the documentary Taxicab. I think it's Taxicab from the Dark Side. You know, when we went over into Afghanistan, we offered $20,000 for every tip of a terrorist. And I got to tell you, if that program's rolled out here in the United States, my ex-wife will turn me in a heartbeat. There's no doubt about it. And this is what happened over in Afghanistan. So we rounded up a bunch of people based on tips that we paid $20,000 for. Can you imagine $20,000 going into Afghanistan in 2001, 2002? How many people just went, I think Akbar might be a terrorist. Where do I get my check? And we just rounded these people up. But many have never been found guilty of anything. But if I was locked up in Gitmo as a Muslim, it might give me a little chuckle to know that the same deep state that locked me up in Gitmo was also locking up innocent Americans. That here's the even worse part about it, to add insult to injury. And I would especially chuckle because if I was a Muslim from Afghanistan who was locked up, who the deep state had targeted me, you know, after they invaded my country, maybe I decided to fight back after they invaded my country, and then they took me and they locked me up in Gitmo, at least I would think to myself, if I had to have any comforting thoughts, I would think to myself, well, at least I didn't pay taxes to the government that's locking me up. At least I didn't have to actually pay for my own persecution. I would say prosecution, but many of these people have never stood trial. They're just locked up. But at least I didn't have to pay for it. Your tax dollars, American tax dollars, are being used right now to keep January 6th protesters locked up. American taxpayer dollars. For all of the patriots out there, all the people like myself who've really sympathized with these people from January 6th who have had the heavy hand of government just smash down on their head, your tax dollars are paying for the federal prison guards that are abusing and torturing these poor people. And I find myself again uttering the words that dare not be said on conservative talk radio. Is Trump doing anything to draw any attention to the mistreatment of these people? I'm just curious. I'm not on Truth Social. And maybe he has mentioned these things in passing while he's on a jet to another golf outing with the Saudis or something. I don't know, but it does seem like these poor people are just being left to rot. But if I was a Muslim, at least I could sleep a little better at night knowing at least I didn't pay taxes my entire life to fund the operation that is being used against me. It's bad enough to be hauled halfway around the world and put into a prison cell. At least I didn't have to pay for it, too. Mike Lindell, yesterday, the MyPillow guy, apparently was detained and his cell phone taken at a Hardee's restaurant. FBI tracked him down. Scooted up some cars on one side, on the other side, and the back side of him to confiscate his cell phone at a Hardee's yesterday. And so this brings up my point. I'd like to know from conservatives, can you see the mistake of enabling the security state in the wake of 9/11? Can you see the error of your ways in cheering endless national security budgets? Now, look, I have admitted many times I was wrong on this issue. Absolutely was wrong. In the 1990s, I believed a big, strong federal government with a military that could snoop and spy on anybody that was part of America's greatness. I was dead wrong. And I realized it sometime in the early 2000s as I saw this thing kind of unfolding and saw the Patriot Act and thought, well, that's kind of weird. We're going to let them snoop and spy, and they've got their own secret courts that rubber stamp warrants and stuff. That doesn't really seem real conservative, but, you know, I probably wrestled with it for a year or so, but it's George Bush doing it. I mean, I've got a Bush bumper sticker on my car. Surely he's the good guy. But can you now see the damage that's been done to our freedoms at the hands of the U.S. government and both political parties, Benny Thompson voting against the Patriot Act and then ending up at the top of the Homeland Security Committee? Or are people still trapped so much in political theater and think this is just only an issue of the Biden regime? Now, I'll remind you that this is Christopher Wray. This idea of domestic terrorism, this is not new. The exercise of it, the purge of a previous administration by Joe Biden is relatively new. We haven't seen this before. It's probably been warranted all of them. Here's the difference between me and a lot of people, and I get to just say these things out loud and people can turn off the show, whatever. I don't know that the Trump administration didn't commit some technical crimes. My problem is always with the selectivity that they do these things. The Hillary Clinton, she's making the rounds. I believe she saw a headline that she maybe did some kind of an interview with Megan Thee Stallion to talk about WAP. I could not stomach watching that exchange, but if you know what WAP is. But it is the selectivity of that. And it's also my point of view that every president of modern times should be rotting in a cell somewhere for particularly war crimes and crimes against humanity. So I don't know that Trump didn't do something with papers or something that has bridged some technical law on classified documents. Of course, he'll be held accountable for it, where the Clintons wouldn't or the Obamas wouldn't and Biden wouldn't. We know that they selectively enforce these things. But this is the problem when you have a country that's just got endless, endless, endless laws and tons of secrets. They really like their secrets at our federal level, don't they? Everything's classified. Everything's hidden. And it's so funny because every president campaigns on having the most transparent administration in the history of our country. This is always a campaign talking point. And then they classify more and more stuff. And so I'm just really very curious. You can email me, MikeMadison@WYEB.com. You can call in and I'll work on getting a text line. That would probably be better for the format of this show. But I'm just curious to know if conservatives have really awakened to this outside of the political theater of thinking this is just Biden. Because Christopher Wray was talking about threats to our country coming from white supremacists and domestic terrorists long before Joe Biden won the presidency. This was Christopher Wray was Trump's guy. And to do that annoying thing that I do, I warned you the minute that Christopher Wray's name was floated out there that this was not a good idea. I was told I didn't understand. It's, you know, it's the 12D chess stuff. I'm still waiting for this chess match to take its final turn to victory. But I'm just very curious. I'm very curious if they believe that the only problem is that the Democrats control this national security state, or was it a mistake? Was it a mistake for 20 years? Is it just too painful for people to admit to themselves that they got duped to this level? I'm having text conversations with people about bug out locations, for the love of God. It's gotten kind of serious. I just wonder if there's any hope that maybe the right can understand that this thing is bad. It doesn't matter who's controlling the government. You should not have set up this size of a government that could snoop and spy on all of us in the first place. Be right back. You can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. We're the renegades, it is atomic age. All right, I'm about to play up something that the Libertarian Party had retweeted. It's from the 10th Amendment Center. Then it says the caption for this little 1 minute recounting of kind of warnings of founding fathers and how you stop this kind of governmental overreach in its tracks. That's what they called for us to do. It says resistance is essential if you want liberty. The founders didn't just consider resistance to federal overreach as a good idea or something to try later. They thought it was an essential first response to violations of the Constitution. And so, because I can't help myself, you know, when people look at the at the Biden administration, and look, Biden set himself up. I mean, he sealed his place in history with that last speech as just essentially a fascist dictator. Behind the military shadows behind him, along with the blood red walls, it was really a quite objectionable thing, as he called out tens of millions of Americans as enemies of our country. There's no doubt about that. But You know, I can't help but thinking when we look at Edward Snowden from the beginning of the show, you know, this is a guy who he was a whistleblower. He told us that our federal government was doing something wildly unconstitutional, which was snooping and spying on all of us, collecting our data without any warrant or any probable cause whatsoever. For that, by the Obama administration, he was banished. He was exiled into Russia. Donald Trump didn't lift a finger to help him. Didn't pardon Snowden, even towards the end of what he knew was the first term he would not be repeating. He left Snowden to rot. Same thing. And this is the one thing that I don't understand about people who consider themselves patriots and against this kind of governmental overreach. The prosecution of Julian Assange is a journalist. That should be so widely condemned in the Trump movement, but it's another one of those things we're supposed to just ignore, that Donald Trump brought in Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pompeo led this jihad against a journalist who dared to expose deep state secrets. Julian Assange was fighting the deep state. Julian Assange was fighting the swamp. Donald Trump hired the swamp to take out Julian Assange that was fighting the swamp. And so this is why I just don't get how I'm supposed to ignore that. These things are all interrelated. You look at the treatment of what's going on with the January 6th people and just understand, I mean, during the Trump administration, a journalist was targeted in just as deplorable a way. Julian Assange is basically, they've tried to slow kill him in prison. It's obvious his health is not good. He's being held in terrible conditions in Belmarsh Prison, Great Britain. And he was kept there by the Trump administration, seeking to extradite him to the United States. And we're still waiting to see if that's going to happen so that Joe Biden can finish the job that Donald Trump started by taking out a very inconvenient journalist to the deep state. But this is, this is the... I'm recounting with the Department of Homeland Security and the feds now were locked in on people who were anti-government, and then I go on an hour-long anti-government raid. I could be in some big trouble here. But this is the 10th Amendment Center, a legitimate organization, and they explain to you exactly how closely you should have, and this is why I wonder inside the heart of conservatives now, if you are willing to admit to yourself this is not a partisan issue. The Republicans voted for the Patriot Act. It was reauthorized during the Trump administration along with the National Defense Authorization Act. This thing is not partisan. This is a matter of the government and its overreach. Now, how different administrations choose to use it, there certainly is a distinction, and the Biden administration is certainly the most egregious in targeting its own citizens. It's really disgusting. But the problem is that we've waited too long. Waited too long. And so this guy from the 10th Amendment Center recounts the words of the Founding Fathers.
Resistance is essential if you want liberty. Mercy Otis Warren told us we need to resist the first approaches of tyranny. James Madison said states and the people should develop plans of resistance to federal encroachments. And James Iredell, one of the first Supreme Court justices, agreed. He said the only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. And the people will resist if the government usurp powers not delegated to it. Now, notice he didn't consider resistance just a good idea or a potential solution to be used later after we've tried everything else. He considered it essential and the only resource in response to usurpation. This is exactly what Thomas Jefferson advised as well. Where powers are assumed which have not been delegated, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy.
And you know what's so sad about that is that in the state of Mississippi, this red state with a supermajority of Republicans who would consider themselves, you know, fans of the Founding Fathers, there's no chance that our establishment Republicans here in the state of Mississippi resist these kinds of things. I mean, it may be when it gets really, really bad, maybe you'd see something different coming out of it. But we have a party. We have a loyal Republicans. They're statists. We have a statist government here in the state of Mississippi. I don't know what states around the country. New Hampshire has got some freedom lovers in their legislative body there, but there, I don't know. There are many states, some, but Mississippi's not on that list of first movers in 10th Amendment nullification of federal stuff. Oh, some rumblings about it now. It's gotten so egregious. But the problem is, and this is why I keep saying this, I wonder if conservatives realize you screwed up. You allowed little encroachments here or there because you thought, well, they're just targeting somebody else. They're targeting those radical brown people halfway around the world. What do I have to worry about? They can spy on me all they want. I'm not some radical jihadist. And what the founder said was in the early Supreme Court justices, who would all be considered domestic terrorists now, I guess, what they said was at the very first sign, the very first sign of the government overreach, that's when you stop it. As I've said a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, fought the founding, the revolution over a 1.5% tax. The founding fathers said, no. We know where this goes. We know where taxation goes. We let 1.5% in. It becomes 5%, becomes 10%. They fought a revolution. Now we're at 30%, 50%. And people are just begging for a 3% tax cut. That's the most patriotic we can get. We've waited too long. This national security apparatus, and unfortunately it was driven by the right, is coming back to bite us. We'll see how bad that is. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And just in time, I'm going to switch topics. Ah, I certainly needed this break. It's going to get me a little dark and maybe preachy in that last hour. So I'm glad to move on to something else. We do every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. This is an hour each week dedicated to trying to convince, explain, highlight the ability that you have to affect your health outcomes, that you are not fated to a life of disease and discomfort. You're not genetically deficient and just lacking certain pharmaceuticals. No, your health fate is in your own hands should you choose to take up the responsibility for your own health. That's what this show is all about. I start everyone by explaining I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, not a biologist, not a chemist, not an immunologist, not a surgeon, not a nurse, not a therapist, not a PT. I'm nothing. I have no ability to advise you on your health. I'm just trying to lay out some breadcrumbs to you to say if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, it's within your hands to change the course of your health. talked a little bit last week about the fact my next health experiment, biohack for myself, is I'm going to attempt the carnivore diet. I say attempt. I don't hear a lot of people saying it's really very difficult, and I'm actually very, very excited about it. I had a delay in going down. My schedule got too tight last week to get down to South Mississippi, Hattiesburg area to pick up my beef from Stonington Farms. But I will be planning to make the trip tomorrow, and we're hoping to set up maybe a Jackson sell day. Right now, you can go to stoningtonfarm.com, and you can order bulk beef purchases, half cow, things like that, and they'll deliver up here for free. But for smaller orders, they just really, it's not, doesn't make sense for them to do that yet. So we're going to try to figure out a way maybe to have a day or 2 days a month or something like that where they can bring up stuff. You can place smaller orders. So I'll keep you posted on that. This is Stonington Farms. You can find them at stoningtonfarm.com. This is Mississippi-raised, Mississippi-born, Mississippi-processed beef that is raised with no hormones, no antibiotics. This is grass-fed until the day they are processed. So they are eating what cows are intended to eat. The nutritional profile of their beef is so much far and above what you're going to find in the regular grocery stores, and I can tell you right now, it is not any more expensive. You can get better quality meat from a local farm that is grass-fed, no hormones, no antibiotics, for the same cost as you're going to get the cattle operation, the CAFOs, that's got treated in its packaging with chemicals. The cows are given antibiotics and hormones, and they're fed grain diets that are not natural for cows. I am thrilled to death, and I'm entrusting Stonington Farm with probably about 75% of everything I eat going forward on this carnivore diet, and I couldn't be more happy. I know that if carnivore is good for me, if it works for me, then I'll be getting the best nutrition I can get out of the beef that I use. When I get ready to fast, and I've talked about fasting before, I consume, pun intended, a lot of information on why I'm doing it, all the benefits I'll get out of it. Fasting is not necessarily something I really look forward to. I look forward to the benefits, but you got to kind of mentally get yourself prepared to go 5 to 7 days without eating any food and just simply drinking water. And so I'm doing the same thing with carnivore. I'm just doing a ton of research on it. I'm listening to different people talk about the health benefits that they've experienced with the carnivore diet. There's a lot of podcasts out there, lots of YouTube material on this. Not much of it is done in sound bites. Most of these things are, 50-minute to an hour and a half interviews with doctors who recommend carnivore diet to their patients for everything from autoimmune diseases, cancers, things like that. So I'm going through a lot of this information right now. Dr. Sean Baker, he is an MD. He's an orthopedic surgeon. In his mid-50s, he's been carnivore for one time, and he's one of probably the kind of the leading guys in this movement, as small as it is. It's bigger than I thought it was, but it certainly isn't as big as the government, where the government tells you to have that base of your food pyramid as being whole grains. Anyway, I did want to play this one small snippet out of one of his podcasts. This is a woman who has had a... make sure I got this thing queued up. I do not. This is a woman who has been suffering from osteoporosis, and he does an interview with her. The entire podcast is, kind of long. It's probably about 45 minutes long, but the intro to it I thought was kind of interesting. So as this thing gets to where I need it to get, I'm going to play for you a little something. But, even if it's not carnivore, I've done these same kinds of things with keto, with just getting out of the standard American diet. The amount of health benefits that people average, everyday, normal people, just completely changed the course of their life. I thought this was an interesting one for this woman who was suffering, had been diagnosed with osteoporosis.
I had been diagnosed with osteoporosis, all the weightlifting and that sort of thing and eating meat. I have actually reversed my osteoporosis in my spine to normal. My physicians were kind of like, they didn't comment at all. Now, when I was diagnosed with osteoporosis, they were all about trying to get me to take those medicines that they think will fix your bones. The radiologist, right after he did the scan, he said, they're going to tell you you need to take all those medicines. Don't do it. They're poison, and I appreciated that. And so I told the doctors, I'm not going to take those medicines. I'm going to exercise and address things from a different perspective. They don't say anything when that works.
Yeah, and that's really what you have to go through. I mean, you have to take control of your own health. If you're actually interested in doing it, you're going to have to do a little bit of battling. You're going to get looked at cross-eyed by medical professionals. But that also highlights the fact that her radiologist said, look, you've got osteoporosis. You've got some issues in your spine there. They're going to try to put you on all these drugs. They're just a bunch of poisons. There are great doctors out there that are helping people, explaining to them that they can do things besides the pharmacological or the cut, burn, and poison model of our medical establishment. And so God love these doctors out there that wake people up like that. Anyway, this woman goes on to great detail to talk about how she has reclaimed her health from osteoporosis. I believe she's in her 60s, and she's working out, feeling great, and her osteoporosis has reversed itself. She did this originally, I believe, on the keto diet. She started getting carbs out of her diet, and now she's ended up on carnivore and has had great success. So anyway, I'll keep you up to date on my progress with that. This was interesting. The FDA, this is where I started the show saying, somebody said they thought that this might have been a joke, but this shows up in Twitter from the FDA blue checkmark Twitter feed. And this is what the FDA says when it comes to these shots. Don't be shocked, ! You can now hashtag recharge your immunity with an updated hashtag COVID-19 booster. FDA.gov/update. Now, I've been talking about this for a few days, since last Friday when I ran across a clip of Dr. Jha, who is Biden's COVID advisor, where he said, you need to go out there and get these updated vaccines. They're starting to use not even the term booster as much now as the updates. You need to be updated in your vaccines. And the graphic on this FDA tweet is the silhouette of three people, and above them is a battery. one of the people has just two bars, and the other one has three bars, and then another one has two bars, and then it shows the giant syringe, and suddenly it's all green. The battery is fully charged. I find this incredibly creepy, and I brought it up yesterday. I shared the links with a few people, listeners, who emailed me. If you hear anything on the show that you'd like to see my source material on, you can always email me, mikemadison@wyab.com. But I shared an article yesterday that shows that the COVID vaccines are destroying your innate immune system. Maybe destroying is too big of a term, but this is research that's now being published in mainstream medical journals like the New England Journal of Medicine, where they're saying that it looks like these boosters are actually taking away, impairing your innate immune system. And what they're doing is asking you to go out and update that immune system now that you don't get the natural updates. You don't have the benefits of your God-given immune system now because that's been harmed by these shots. Now you're basically renting your immune system from Pfizer, from Moderna. And this graphic here in this FDA tweet where they're showing the batteries on people and telling you you can recharge your immunity with a shot, I'm telling you, I think that is the new model. I brought it up yesterday. It's like the World Economic Forum told you, you'll own nothing and be happy, and we thought that was just for cars and homes. It may be your immune system as well. Now your immune system is being licensed out to the big pharma, and you got to go by and get it updated, or it's going to fail you because they've destroyed your natural immune system. The great thing about this FDA tweet is all of the comments underneath it. Somebody has just replied with #8mice. They're referring to the fact that these new updated shots have only been tested in Pfizer's case on 8 mice. No humans, no data from human trials in 8 mice. And they approved this thing for emergency use, even though there's no COVID emergency right now, but 8 mice. Moderna, to their credit, did study their shots on somewhere between 16 and 20 mice. So if you want the more mouse-tested shot, you go to Moderna, I guess. Underneath this FDA tweet, all kinds of people, wow, I mean, wow. I don't even have words for this. That's what one person said. I love this one. Someone tweeted back at you, the FDA, says, define immunity, and somebody answered and says, immunity equals officially granted exemption from legal proceedings. The only true immunity being granted by these shots is that given to the pharmaceutical companies, who have complete liability protection for any dangers that these shots pose. I mean, response after response underneath this thing. As a matter of fact, all of them that I've seen are nothing. Here is an hashtag abolish the FDA. Underneath that, while we're at it, let's abolish all alphabet agencies. Somebody said, could you at least let Pfizer do their own marketing? Of course, if you've listened to this show for any period of time, for 5.5 years, I've been telling you that the FDA is nothing but the marketing arm of Big Pharma. Same with the CDC. So anyway, it does appear that people are waking up, but maybe this thing just made the rounds and some people who were not down with this grand genetic experiment, and so they flooded onto this board. I don't know, but there's a significant number of people who see the same thing that I do, which is just an absolutely horrific idea that your immune system, your natural immune system is gone, and now you have to outsource the updates to pharmaceutical companies, theoretically, if this new research is correct about the harm it's doing to your immune system, for the rest of your life. Because it's not just for COVID. They're saying that the immune system is harmed in an innate way, meaning it's not there to fight against other diseases as well. So if you've taken these shots and this information is true, you're going to be taking a lot of shots for the rest of your life. I'll be right back. I'm going to do a fairly short segment here with a couple of just headlines. A couple of them kind of interesting to me as to what the intention of these stories were about health-related topics. And then when I come back, I'm going to get into, you know, if you have, we talk a lot in this country about depression, but if you suffer from things like fatigue, muscle twitching, confusion, nausea, weakness, constipation, pins and needles, poor appetite, all the way down to getting a lot of diseases, MS, autoimmune rheumatic diseases, cancers, osteoporosis, myalgia, type 1 diabetes. There's something that you're probably missing in your diet that you should get to, but the mainstream media and our medical establishment is doing everything they can to tell you to not include this in your diet. So we'll get to that after this next break. The headlines that I saw, I have long record of talking about these artificial sweeteners that are in so many things. We've been convinced that you need to have the diet everything. The no sugar stuff, when it's loaded up with these things like Splenda, aspartame, these different things. This is as I stare across the studio desk here at three packets of Splenda that are sitting. I think I may be the only person at the radio station that does not use these artificial sweeteners, even though they've been proven time and time again to actually promote weight gain. But they had a couple of articles about these artificial sweeteners that have just recently come out, and I find them interesting. I don't necessarily disagree with them. Artificial sweeteners, quote, artificial sweeteners may not be a safe alternative to sugar. That's from Mathilde Touvier. She's a study author and research director at French National Institute for Health and Medical Research. Last month, a smaller study found that consuming non-nutritive sweetener, sugar substitutes that contain few calories or nutrients, could alter a person's gut microbes and potentially elevate blood sugar levels. High blood sugar can increase one's risk of diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. Prior to that, a June lab study found that artificial sweeteners prompted gut bacteria to invade cells in the intestinal wall, which could ultimately raise one's risk of infection or organ failure. Other previous research has linked artificial sweeteners to obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and increased cancer risk as well. The more data that comes out, this is a quote, the more data that comes out showing these adverse health effects, the less we're going to want to encourage people to switch from added sugars to non-nutritive sweeteners. That's what Katie Page said. She's an associate professor of medicine at University of Southern California. But these stories, there is a whole host of these, and it's one of the cruelest things in our society, I think, because I know a lot of diabetics drink diet sodas, and there's a lot of evidence that you're actually making your situation worse. If you're battling diabetes or if you're battling obesity, I know people will consume diet sodas. These things actually make you crave carbs, interrupt your gut microbiome, and actually increase your chance of getting diabetes from obesity. And so I see people in the grocery store trying to do something for themselves. I don't know, very many people would say that, at least originally, they like the taste of a diet soda better than the regular. But they actually sacrifice a little bit of taste in order to get the diet because they're trying to do something for their health. Big swing and a miss. These artificial sweeteners are just terrible for you. They just are. The research is showing this. And certainly, if you look and consider people who have consumed a ton of these diet sodas, you'll notice they're not losing weight. And I'm sure a lot of people believe that if they save the calories there, they can have the piece of cake. There's also that, too. But these diet sodas are, I believe, just really a health disaster. Aspartame as an artificial sweetener was rejected by the FDA back when it was honest in the 1970s until Donald Rumsfeld came in as chief of staff of Reagan's White House. He had been the chairman of Searle, the manufacturer of aspartame, and he called and fired the head of the FDA in the middle of the night, I believe around 2 a.m., so he could install one of his guys to approve aspartame as a food, something that humans consume. The reason I even bring this up now, it's interesting, is this, I've talked about this before, but the headlines on the couple of stories I ran across this, recent studies suggest, this is NBC News, recent studies suggest that consuming too many artificial sweeteners could elevate blood sugar levels and raise one's risk of heart attack or stroke. There was a story that was also basically on the same time. This appeared on Yahoo News from AFP. It says sweeteners may be linked to heart disease risk, study suggests. Now, the reason I'm not suggesting that that may not be the case, these things are not good for your health, but it is interesting that we're seeing story after story after story, everything from noise pollution to everything else, to start explaining why more people might be having so many strokes and heart attacks. So while I do believe that Artificial sweeteners are not good for your health and are a big swing and a miss if you're even trying to control weight or your diabetes. It's just interesting that they are implicating every possible substance, everything that we interact with on a daily basis, and implicating it in heart disease, heart attacks, and strokes, but never mentioning the one thing that's brand new to our society that may be actually the reason for the increase in the things we're seeing, particularly in young adults. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk about this one thing that the mainstream media, mainstream medicine really tries to get you to just stay away from. Yet it is known widely with tens of thousands of studies to be tremendously beneficial for your health. We've talked about it here on the show before, but I found a very interesting thing about depression and this one particular substance you should be have abundance in your body. And so this is kind of a twofer. It is the benefits of vitamin D as well as the difference between being sufficient in vitamin D and taking an antidepressant. We are the most over-medicated society on planet Earth. A large part of that consumption of pharmaceuticals is antidepressants. So let's stack up just vitamin D to depression, antidepressants, and see what the big difference is between the two. You may be surprised to hear it. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. At times, I have threatened to call this show the Vitamin D Show because I've talked about it a lot. But one of the reasons that I do that is, number one, there's so many benefits to having proper amounts of vitamin D. Number two, the vast majority of people in the United States have suboptimal vitamin D. And we see all this sickness. We see how prone we were to everything from COVIDs to flus to cancers to the rest of these conditions. And vitamin D is so easy. And I actually believe people forget. I extrapolate that from my own experience. There's times where, you know, I'll run out of a supplement or I'll start studying something and I'll focus in on something and realize that I've stopped some good habit that I had before. Vitamin D, had it been suggested by the medical establishment at the onset of COVID, would have cost everybody about $5 a month for a supplement or for free. You can take your lunch at work today out onto a bench somewhere outside, get 20 to 30 minutes of sun on your skin, and it's a fairly nice day out there today too, and do yourself huge benefit in terms of your health. 3/4 of U.S. teens and adults are deficient in vitamin D, the so-called sunshine vitamins, whose deficits are increasingly blamed from everything from cancer and heart disease to diabetes, according to new research. The trend marks a dramatic increase in the amount of vitamin D deficiency in the U.S. This is according to findings set to be published, and it already has been, this is an older story, in the Archives of Internal Medicine. Between 1988 and 1994, 45% of people who were examined had 30 nanograms per milliliter or more of vitamin D, the blood level a growing number of doctors consider sufficient for overall health. A decade later, just 23%. Just 23% of people had sufficient levels of vitamin D. So if you're out there listening to this show, very good possibility. It's pretty easy to look at your habits. Do you run from the sun like the medical establishment has told you to do for all these years? If you're not, you can supplement so easily and so cheaply with a good vitamin D3 supplement. But the thing that got me started on this was I ran across an article, and this is going to take me into the vitamin D and depression versus an antidepressant thing as well. This was a story that was titled, "The Corporate Media Respects the Science, Wages Jihad Against Natural Medicine." Well, you can imagine that is clickbait to me. It was a piece written by Ben Barty at the Daily Bell. And he goes into talking about really what took place during COVID and the war that the medical establishment took against any kind of natural health stuff. Even though 3/4 of Americans are woefully deficient in critical vitamin D, part-time corporate media hack and full-time Johns Hopkins technocrat Stephen Salzberg recently penned a Forbes article demonizing it as worthless and even somehow dangerous. This was the headline of a Forbes magazine article. "Stop taking vitamin D already!" The author, this Steven Salzberg, he's a professor of biomedical engineering at Johns Hopkins. And we know the role that Johns Hopkins played in lockdowns and the rest of the horrific policies around COVID. According to Johns Hopkins, you don't need vitamin D, which comes from the sun, but you do need nanotech robots called Theragrippers that latch onto your intestines just like parasites to deliver whatever latest drugs Big Pharma has developed. This is a link to a story. Johns Hopkins researchers take inspiration from parasitic work for medicine delivery. So there was really an effort by the medical establishment, by people like this Salzberg character, to go out and try to demonize vitamin D. Let me tell you, I believe there are toxic levels of vitamin D if you were to take it in a supplement form, but it is an astronomical amount, and the first thing that happens is you get a little upset tummy. That's basically the side effect if you really overdose on vitamin D. Myself, I take 10,000 IUs a day, unless I'm out in the sun, and then I just don't even take them. But anyway, the health consequences of vitamin D deficiency are as debilitating as they are well documented. These include, and this is if you are suffering from any of these things, know somebody you love is suffering from some of these things, this is your first line, first thing you should investigate, because it's so easy. Chronic fatigue, muscle twitching, confusion, nausea, weakness, constipation, paresthesia, which is pins and needles, and poor appetite. In addition to the above symptoms, low vitamin D levels markedly increased risk of acute and chronic illnesses, including infectious diseases, multiple sclerosis, autoimmune rheumatic diseases, ARD, various forms of cancer, osteoporosis, arthralgia, myalgia, and type 1 diabetes. And so they go through this list of basically saying, here's another Forbes article. And this is this jihad against natural medicine and doing your own research that you have to be ready for. You have to, in your mind, understand that there is a lot of resistance to you taking control of your own health. This is another Forbes article. The headline is, you must not, quote, do your own research, unquote, when it comes to science. And they go through all of these things. There is a piece. This is from the National Institutes of Health website. ncbi.nim.nih.gov. Okay, this is on the National Institutes of Health website, and this is just one of a million different studies that have looked at vitamin D. The study says vitamin D plays a crucial role in calcium homeostasis and bone metabolism with chronic and or severe vitamin D deficiency. A decline in intestinal calcium and phosphorus absorption levels leads to, oh man, I'm telling you, I've told you I'm not a scientist, hypocalcemia leading to secondary hyperparathyroidism. The secondary hyperparathyroidism then leads to phosphaturia and accelerated bone demineralization. This can further result in osteomalacia and osteoporosis in adults and osteomalacia and rickets in children. And I'm going to read just one more paragraph from this. I know this gets sciencey, but I'm trying to explain to you they know the problems with low vitamin D levels, yet they spent 2 years telling you don't do your own research and stop taking vitamin D already, exclamation point. Majority of patients with vitamin D deficiency are asymptomatic. Again, 75% of U.S. adults and teens are deficient in vitamin D. However, even mild chronic vitamin D deficiency can lead to chronic hypocalcemia and hyperparathyroidism, which can contribute risk to osteoporosis, falls, and fractures, especially in elderly population. Patients with prolonged and severe vitamin D deficiency can experience symptoms associated with secondary hyperparathyroidism, including bone pain, arthralgias, myalgias, fatigue, muscle twitching, and weakness. Fragility fractures may result from chronic vitamin D deficiency leading to osteoporosis. And then listen to this one for all you parents out there. In children, irritability, lethargy, developmental delay, bone changes, or fractures can be symptoms of vitamin D deficiency. All of this is on the National Institutes of Health website. And yet they came out, this same National Institutes of Health that's got this stuff, and this is not the only one that's on their website. They came out during COVID and told you, quit listening to all that vitamin D stuff. Back to this article that originally got me started from the Daily Bell. Vitamin D is proven in spades over and over again in literally thousands of clinical trials from researchers worldwide over decades to enhance immunity. For instance, in one meta-analysis, the granddaddy of all study designs, in which scientists combine data from multiple studies and then aggregate the data, researchers concluded that, quote, vitamin D modulates the systemic inflammatory response through interaction with the immune system. As such, it has a possible protective role against the risk of respiratory tract infections and other diseases. That's direct from the Journal of Steroid Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, published on the National Institutes of Health website. The purported public health godhead itself. The methodology and conclusions are unassailable. Vitamin D is indispensable for a strong immune system. No serious doctor would claim anything to the contrary, yet. Vitamin D manufacturers, and this is the jihad that's been led against natural treatments, not only just during COVID, but all the time. They've been going on for a long time. Just read off a laundry list of things that can happen to you, problems that you might run into with poor vitamin D levels. Yet vitamin D manufacturers aren't legally allowed to make any claim related to their product's documented beneficial properties. It doesn't matter how many studies they've got. It doesn't matter they do these huge meta-analyses that show the benefits of vitamin D. They do not allow people who make vitamin D to actually claim any of that science. In fact, they're legally required to place a disclaimer explicitly stating that the FDA hasn't approved vitamin D for any therapeutic purpose or else risk getting sued into bankruptcy. That's how America, land of the free, works. So this is not new that they have attacked natural health during COVID and tried to strip you of your ability to take even small, inexpensive, and easy steps to help protect yourself from a respiratory disease. This is not new. They go after supplements all the time. But I wanted to tie this in. Well, I've got to take a break, and then I'll come back. So many people out there on antidepressants, I've talked about them a lot. There's a ton of side effects to these things. Some of them really horrific. Suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, restlessness. I mean, all kinds of things. Irritability, mood changes. And if you are on an antidepressant, I'm going to say this every single time I mention this, do not start, stop, take, stop taking or adjust your dosage without some serious monitoring by a doctor, because that's when it's always dangerous. When you start, when you stop, or when you adjust your dosage, that's when your behavioral changes can be pronounced and potentially dangerous. So make sure you were doing that under supervision of a physician. And maybe not the physician that put you on the dang things in the first place, but anyway. I wanted to get into this this vitamin D because this was a very interesting article that ran in Newsweek in 2010. A woman named Sharon Begley. She's got some very interesting stuff in here talking about some of the research around vitamin D and the effectiveness of these antidepressants that they're passing out like Tic Tacs. Be right back. From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment here, and I'm about to do some reading. I'll try to have some voice inflection. I'll try to do some things to make this interesting. I don't like reading long passages, but I think this is important. It's talking about antidepressants, vitamin D, and placebos. Here we go. This was a 2010 Newsweek article by someone named Sharon Begley. Although the year is young, it has already brought my first moral dilemma. In early January, a friend mentioned that his New Year's resolution was to beat his chronic depression once and for all. Over the years, he had tried a medicine chest's worth of antidepressants, but none had really helped in any enduring way, and when the side effects became so unpleasant that he stopped taking them, the withdrawal symptoms, cramps, dizziness, headaches, were torture. Did I know of any research that might help him decide whether a new antidepressant his doctor recommended might finally lift his chronic darkness at noon? The moral dilemma was this. Oh, yes, I knew of 20-plus years of research on antidepressants from the old tricyclics to the newer SSRIs that target serotonin, that's Zoloft, Paxil, and the granddaddy of them all, Prozac, to even newer ones that also target norepinephrine, that's Effexor and Wellbutrin. The research had shown that antidepressants helped about three-quarters of people with depression who take them, a consistent finding that serves as the basis for the often repeated mantra, quote, "There is no question that the safety and efficacy of antidepressant rests on solid scientific evidence." This was written by Richard Friedman. He's a professor of the Weill Cornell Medical College. But ever since a seminal study in 1998, whose findings were reinforced by landmark research in the Journal of the American Medical Association last month, that evidence has come with a big asterisk. Yes, the drugs are effective in that they lift depression in most patients, but that benefit is hardly more than what patients got when they unknowingly, and as part of the study, take a dummy pill, a placebo. As more and more scientists who study depression and the drugs that treat it are concluding, that suggests that antidepressants are basically expensive Tic Tacs. That first analysis in 1998 examined 38 manufacturer-sponsored studies involving just over 3,000 depressed patients. The doctors, psychology researchers Irving Kirsch and Guy Sparson of the University of Connecticut saw, as everyone else had, that patients did improve, often substantially, on SSRIs, tricyclics, and even MAO inhibitors, a class of antidepressants that dates from the 1950s. This improvement, demonstrated in scores of clinical trials, is the basis for the ubiquitous claim that antidepressants work. But when Kirsch compared the improvement in patients taking the drugs with the improvement in those taking dummy pills, clinical trials typically compare an experimental drug with a placebo, he saw that the difference was minuscule. Patients on a placebo improved about 75% as much as those on drugs. Put another way, three-quarters of the benefit from antidepressants seems to be a placebo effect. Quote, "We wondered, what's going on?" recalls Kirch, who is now at the University of Hull in England. Quote, "These are supposed to be wonder drugs and have huge effects." And this is one of the things, too, about the medical establishment that they just can't imagine. All of these big pharma-funded studies? I can't be wrong. The extra effect of real drugs wasn't much to celebrate either. It amounted to 1.8 points on the 54-point scale doctors used to gauge the severity of depression. Though questions about mood, sleep habits, and the like. Sleeping better counts as 6 points. Being less fidgety during the assessment is worth 2 points. In other words, the clinical significance of the 1.8 extra points from real drugs was underwhelming. Now Kirch was certain, quote, "The belief that antidepressants can cure depression chemically is simply wrong," unquote. And we've talked about this, that there is no diagnosable chemical imbalance in your brain that any of these drugs affect. They're guessing. Look that up. Some people might hear that and go, "No, that's not true. These drugs are designed to combat a chemical imbalance in the brain." That's untrue. And this has become more mainstream news over the years. I've been talking about it here since the day I came on air. There is no test for that. There is no certainty of any kind of chemical imbalance. These are drugs designed to treat a problem that they think might exist. The 2002 study ignited a furious debate, but more and more scientists were becoming convinced that Kirsch, who had won respect for research on the placebo response and who had published scores of scientific papers, was onto something. One team of researchers wondered if antidepressants were, quote, "a triumph of marketing over science," unquote. Even defenders of antidepressants agreed that the drugs have, quote, "relatively small," unquote, effects. Another quote here, "Many have been long unimpressed by the magnitude of the differences observed between treatments and controls." That's what psychology researcher Stephen Holland of Vanderbilt University and colleagues wrote. Quote, "what some of our colleagues refer to as the dirty little secret." In Britain, the agency that assesses which treatments are effective enough for the government to pay for stopped recommending antidepressants as a first-line treatment, especially for mild or moderate depression. But if experts know that antidepressants are hardly better than placebos, few patients or doctors do. Some doctors have changed their prescribing habits, says Kirsch, but more, quote, "reacted with anger and incredulity. I screwed the whole thing up on my last word. Doctors just refuse to admit this. They can't go. They've been handing these antidepressants out for decades now, like Tic Tacs, like candy. And the research shows, so on a 54-point scale, they said at most these things change the outcome for any patient by 1.8. So you can take a placebo, or you can get plenty of vitamin D to help yourself. But maybe if you take this drug that's got tremendous, horrific potential side effects, and it might increase your chances of success against depression by about 3%. And imagine the billions and billions of dollars and all of the tragedies. I believe the school shooting phenomenon is certainly related to these psychotropic drugs that our kids have been given. The withdrawals. I know people who have tried to come off of these things, and I'll say it one more time. Do not start, stop, or change your dosage of any of these drugs without strict monitoring, because that's when it's very dangerous. But vitamin D. Vitamin D, there's another story here. Researchers say vitamin D regulates central nervous system disturbances associated with depression. There's a whole story about how they're studying vitamin D and finding out that it has effects on your mood, too. And even if you don't consider yourself a depressed person, you'll probably find your mood improved. There's basically no difference between a placebo and an antidepressant. And vitamin D, without any harmful side effects, the side effects of vitamin D are good. They're good things. Resistance to drugs, and I mean to infections. Resistance to other diseases, including cancer and diabetes. But instead of taking vitamin D, they convince you to take these drugs. Anyway, if you want these resources, you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. Happy to share this information with anybody interested. That's all the time I got. I'll see you tomorrow.
No matter
bye-bye.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.